Welcome to Off Message. I'm Isaac DeVere. Today's guest, Will Hurd, the Republican congressman from Texas. Imagine being a Republican in Congress these days when 8 months of not getting anything major done, despite a Republican majority in the House, a Republican majority in the Senate, and a Republican in the White House, is followed by President Trump taking a deal last week, in the matter of a few hours, proposed by Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer to raise the debt ceiling for 3 months and seal up funding, at least for the first round, for Hurricane Harvey relief. Okay, now imagine on top of that being a Republican in Congress from Texas who's been part of the internal debate about signing off on that disaster relief for his state, and who's more inclined to see government proactively doing things than many in his conference who see their job as stopping government from doing things. Here's a guy who brags about how many of his bills were signed by Barack Obama. He represents a giant border district, but he's against the border wall, and he's for legalizing status for Dreamers. Throw one more on top of that. He's a black Republican, one of only two in the House, plus Tim Scott in the Senate, and still upset about what he says is the doubt on condemning white supremacists that President Trump let linger after Charlottesville. So yeah, it's been a weird couple of months for Will Hurd. I caught up with him in his office in the Cannon Building on the Hill right as the House was going out of session. You'll hear at one point the official clock that's in all members' offices buzz to signal that they were done for the week. But it's been a weird couple of months for a lot of people in Congress, and that's why we're going to kick things off with a conversation with my buddy and our congressional bureau chief here at Politico, John Bresnahan. Before we get there, remember to subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform you prefer. And make sure you're telling your friends and the people you work with to subscribe too. Spread the word. Great guests coming up, including Senator Jeff Merkley from Oregon, on what might be the beginnings of a different kind of left-leaning campaign for president. Check out my article about this interview up on our website at politico.com. Email me at isaac@politico.com with your thoughts and guest suggestions. These are really helpful. I got one over the weekend that we hadn't thought of at all before, and Bridget and I right away started trying to book that person. And follow me on Twitter and Facebook at Isaac DeVere. And now, my conversation with Brez. So what is the state of mind in Congress these days?
I think it's a fascinating dynamic right now. President Trump doing a deal with Democrats on the debt limit and CR, and then talking about a deal on the Dreamers, I mean, has completely, for the moment, disoriented Republicans. They don't know, here's a Republican president who's taken a very hard line stance so far in Simon's office, all of a sudden cutting a deal with Democrats.
But are we reading too much into that? It's one deal?
I wouldn't overdo it. But I do think Trump is – I think it's an important signal. Trump is saying he will do what he has to do. If you watched Obama or George W. Bush this is not something they did. Now, Bill Clinton would, sign a welfare reform bill. I mean, he triangulated against Congress, against his own party when he after he lost his majority. So, I think this is more in that mold, but I don't know if this is sustainable. I mean, I do think there's an interesting thing, a dynamic here at work. Look, he may legislate as an independent or trying to cut deals, but he's going to govern as a conservative. I mean, look at his regulatory actions. Look at his nominations. Look at his judicial nominations. He's not going to all of a sudden turn into a Democrat.
Right. Or a moderate, right?
Or even a moderate.
Just because he's following his
own conservative Republican,
yeah.
Yes. But I do think Trump wants the freedom to be able to cut deals, and he is sending a message to these guys. If you can't get something done, I'll do it.
And how's that message received? Like, what is the Republican psyche among the leadership and also among the rank and file? Is it the same thing? Is it the same message that's being received?
No, it stunned them. I was standing on the House side after the leadership had met with Senate Majority Leader McConnell, the Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, and then on Speaker Ryan and Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, and they met with Trump on debt ceiling, on government funding, on Harvey relief. And, somebody from the House leadership walked up to me and grabbed me and was like, Trump just cut a deal with the Democrats and completely pulled the rug from out. I mean, it was like they were floored. They were floored that he did this. And so I think I do think some of it is like I think they feel like, especially on the House side, I think they feel like Ryan got screwed. It's In a way, it doesn't make it made sense, but it doesn't really make sense. I mean, as from a debt, well, and debt limit, I mean, he buys 3 months. What do you really get for that? You know, he could have passed a longer term debt limit, but he's stuck with the Republicans. But then again, he might not have got a funding bill. So, look, we'll see. We'll see how Trump plays this. I think right now, I think there's some rallying toward their leadership, but I do think. You know, I mean, Trump is unpredictable. They don't know what to think about Trump.
And where do the moderates fit into this? Will Hurd is a moderate, right? We've had over the last couple of days a bunch of retirement announcements from notably moderates, right?
Charlie Dent, who's probably the leading moderate figure in that. I mean, Hurd is a player. And, you know, but Charlie Dent was one. Dave Reichert was a guy also in the House who's looked at it as a moderate. I mean, the moderate is a relative term nowadays in Congress, okay? These are, you know, these are conservative Republicans, you know.
Although Hurd bragged to me about how many bills he had signed by Barack Obama.
Absolutely. And Dent was the same way. You know, Dent was very – he was the only Republican in 2013 to vote against the shutdown, you know, initially. Because they shut down over Obamacare and he voted against it.
Hurd notably wasn't in Congress at that point.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't in the Congress. Hurd wasn't there at that point. But I think he probably would have voted against it as well. I do think Hurd is somebody who, if Dent leaves, I think Hurd could play a bigger role. I do think the role of moderates has become harder and harder to envision and actually execute. The parties, and especially the activists on both parties, liberal and conservative, are much more aggressive now going after anyone who they think is a moderate. If you're not a purist, it's, you know, you're going to get a primary challenge.
And that creates this weird spot for people who are in districts like Hurd's, right? Yeah. He's in one of those 23 districts that is represented by a Republican, right, but that Hillary Clinton won the majority in. Democrats only need 17 seats, right, to win the majority in the House. They're going to go after people like Hurd, it would seem like, although he doesn't have a challenger yet.
No.
But that creates incentives to not be a moderate, right?
Like, yeah. That's it. I mean, most districts, because of gerrymandering on both sides, your biggest threat is a primary challenge, okay? In Republican districts, Democratic districts, safe districts, your biggest threat is a primary challenge. So you're going to have to toe the party line. And in the age of super PACs, when you can have one wealthy donor underwrite a challenger and dump a couple $1 million into a race, you know, out of nowhere, you know, that is an extremely volatile political environment for members. They're always looking for, you know, is there going to be a rich person out there who's going to screw me?
One of the things that really struck me last week was there's an amicus brief that's been filed in the Supreme Court case that could get rid of partisan gerrymandering that a lot of House Republicans and House Democrats both signed on to, including Mark Meadows, the Freedom Caucus chair, but a lot of liberal and moderate Democrats. There does seem to be at least a little bit more than just whining about how terrible things are and maybe going towards it. But where does this leave us? It's just, as you said, it's just a 3-month deal for funding and the debt limit. Is anything going to get done in between now and the end of the calendar year?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a very serious debate about tax reform.
Is it going to result in a bill?
We'll see. The first step will be they have to pass a budget.
Right.
Okay, they have to pass the House and Senate, pass budgets, and then they have to agree on a budget and pass a compromise, or the Senate could just pass the House budget. This doesn't need to go to the president. This is just an internal budget. They're going to need to do that in order to get reconciliation protection for the tax reform bill. That means they get parliamentary protection. They don't need 60 votes in the Senate. They only need 50, okay, assuming Vice President Mike Pence could vote. So they need 50. It lowers the threshold. So there will be a debate over that. I think there will be – listen, tax reform is a debate over government. You know, you want it – you know, what are the the nature of government. What do you want corporations to pay? What do you want wealthy people to pay? How much should middle class pay? The poor? What is the function of government?
But I mean, you know, I mean, there's gonna, all this in
there's three
now?
Months. There's 3 months there. I mean, this is not a new issue. The committees have been working on this for a while. The Ways and Means Committee.
You're always the cynic about Congress.
No, I think no. Listen, I mean, this is not a new issue. I mean, I do think a tax cut is like more likely than tax reform, although tax reform is desperately needed. I mean, we haven't done anything since 1986. Right. The U.S. tax code needs to be reformed.
It's only gotten more complicated.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous now. It's ridiculous. It's no one likes it. I mean, the nominal rates are way too high. For instance, the corporate rate is 35 nominally, but no corporation pays 35% because there's so many loopholes. It needs to be simplified. It needs to be there needs to be some sanity applied to it. I think everybody would want to do it, but I do think, you know, there is a question: how much do we cut taxes for corporations? What loopholes will we get rid of? What do we think rich people should pay? I mean, you know, we do have a huge deficit still. It's going to be $560 billion this year. That's before any emergency funding, okay? So,
and we don't know what the bill will be for Irma or anything.
Yeah, we don't know, and that's assuming that the economic rate growth rate stays the same. I mean, so it's a pretty – I mean, we have some serious challenges, but I think this is a debate everyone wants to have. We need to have it. Will they get it done? I don't know. And then, of course, they need to look at the Dreamers issue, the DACA issue.
That counts as optimism coming from you.
I do. I mean, listen, I do think Trump should get some credit. He has set the table for a debate. He's allowed them to move forward in a debate. Will they pass a bill? I don't know. At this point, I'd see it difficult. It's difficult for me to imagine them passing a tax reform bill. I do think there could be a tax cut bill, especially in an election year, and it's going to be a tough election for Republicans. I do think a tax cut is more likely, but, you know, there is momentum for tax reform. Whether there's enough momentum to get it done, I can't tell right now. I would say probably not.
There's the pessimism.
Yeah, listen. I mean, I do think these guys, look, Congress has a hard time walking and chewing gum at the same time. These guys want to be credit for, you know, not defaulting or shutting down the government. You're not supposed to default, right? It's like paying your rent. You don't get credit for paying your rent because you're supposed to pay your damn rent, all right? You know, I mean, so, you know, I don't think they should be patting themselves on the back too much, but I do think this is, you know, it's going to be an interesting debate. If it's handled at all like adults, you know, we could see something happen.
That's a high bar, handled like adults.
Yeah.
All right, we'll leave it there. That was John Bresnahan, our Congressional Bureau Chief. And now, over to that conversation with Congressman Will Hurd. I feel like the place to start is, what has this last week and maybe this last month or even the last year been like to be a Republican member of the House?
Well, that's a pretty broad question. and for me, it's actually no different than any other time. And because my philosophy is real simple. Be honest, tell people what you're doing and why you're doing it. Agree when you agree and disagree when you disagree, right? And so if you take that philosophy, no matter what comes up, if you react that way, then you're going to be fine. And I think some people have always commented, part of my 9.5 years in the CIA, my stress levels or what causes my hair to go on fire is probably a little bit higher than most, especially if
one would hope.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly, exactly. So look, I think we are at a time where people are still trying to figure out what the takeaways from the last election were. I think there are some misinterpretations of what we should take away. I think also people are trying to put national trends on top of local trends. You know, I just finished.
That's the misinterpretation.
I think that's part of the misinterpretation, right? I just finished 27 town halls over the summer. I call it DC to DQ, where, you know, I represent a very rural district, 29 counties, two time zones, 820 miles of the border between Texas and Mexico. It takes 10 and a half hours to drive from one corner to the other at 80 miles an hour, which is actually the speed limit in most of my district. San Antonio is the biggest city. El Paso is the second biggest city. And we had some national press there with us, and they were always shocked that President Trump's name only came up like three or four times in the entire trip, because people were talking about flooding issues. Now, this was prior to Harvey.
Your district is away from where the storm happened.
Yeah, we had some rain, but San Antonio was really one of the regional coordinating locations. Mm-hmm. It's the largest big city closest to where Harvey hit. So I think it's real easy to try to ascribe these national trends to what's going on locally, and I don't think you can do it. You
know, but what are the national trends?
Well, I think a lot of people want to talk about, you know, whither Donald Trump. You know, what impact?
So you don't mean
that
trends?
Have?
It's like topics of conversation.
Topics,
more, right?
And,
like
and
what we're
this
obsessed
is,
about.
This is going to translate back home down in the district, and it doesn't necessarily the case. So you ask, you know, what has it been like in the last week? This has been Hurricane Harvey. This has been making sure that our first responders don't run out of money. We are facing Irma. We don't know what kind of devastation Irma is going to bring to Florida and the Southeast coast. So I think at the end of the day, this week has been about making sure you take care of people back home. And it is, you know, I think that's a real simple talk.
But when you hear Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer went into the Oval Office and they got what they wanted from the president over the objections of the Republican leaders, where does that put you?
Well, where does it put me? I wasn't in the room negotiating the deal, and I wasn't involved in the pre-negotiation, mm-hmm. nor setting the tone for where the conversation needs to be. And I think if you as a body, and let's call it the Republican Conference, if we're not in agreement on what the topic is going to be or what we want to achieve, then guess what? You're probably not going in with a strong hand. And so I don't blame our leadership for that. I think rank and file members need to understand that there is a team aspect to many of this politics. But also, we got to stop thinking about the fact that, you know, if somebody is wearing a different jersey than I, whatever they're saying is terrible. And I think one of the takeaways from the last election is that people really want us to transcend D or R. And I went on a road trip earlier in the year with my Democratic colleague from El Paso.
Famously and, live on the internet the whole
yeah,
way.
You know, it's a 35-hour trip, 31 hours in the car, 29 hours
time
live
to spend
stream.
With anyone.
Yeah, it really was. And honestly, had we known each other better, we probably wouldn't have done it. But
is that like one of those things where like you're not supposed to be roommates with a friend because then your friendship won't survive it?
I think
you more friends after spending all that time in the car?
We are definitely better friends after spending times in the car. And it look, when you talk with someone multiple times about a particular topic, you start really understanding where they're coming from. And we're coming from the same place. We want to help people. Now the process of getting there may be different. But some of the takeaways I took from that trip, the first 90 minutes was rough. We were on Beto's socials, and Beto is a Democrat, and people were pretty rude to me. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to keep this going for more than an hour and a half. But something didn't change. People appreciated that conversation. And the next day, we were on my socials, and my conservative followers were pretty rude and mean to Beto.
Now we know that we were actually in a congressman's office. That's the clock beeping.
the clock saying that we are out of session for the day. What folks were saying is way more unites us than divides us. And I would say if we focus on that 80% that we agree on, then we're going to be able to deliver services and results for the American people. And we can disagree without being disagreeable.
But that's, I mean, that's one of the things that one of the interpretations of the election results, right, is that people were saying, enough with all of this. We want something different. And that Donald Trump was a representative of doing something different, obviously, than anything we'd done before in this country. And part of that is Washington wasn't doing much of anything. Now it's been 8 months and Washington still isn't doing much of anything, right?
Well, so I would slightly disagree with that latter part, right? I think it's real. It's real easy to say DC is terrible or DC sucks, right? But I will say this: we have examples of doing big things together, and I'll go back to last year. Oh, let me start with last year. ESSA, Every Student Succeeds Act. If you have kids or grandkids, you should know what this is. There's no longer a one-size-fits-all solution to education in the United States of America. This wasn't heralded. This wasn't above the fold. This wasn't talked about on nightly news. I don't think there was a podcast on this. But we're doing a podcast right now. Yeah. But this was a bipartisan piece of legislation that got signed into law. The 21st Century Cures Act.
That you supported.
That I supported.
And that Barack Obama signed.
That Barack Obama signed into law. Yeah. So I last Congress, in the 114th Congress, I got more bills signed into law than any other member of Congress. I'm a Republican. The last president was a Democrat.
You're a Republican, and I think importantly for this, you're a Republican in a district that Democrats want.
Correct.
And so therefore, one would think would be out to deny you accomplishments from the political side of it, right?
I may go back and take this clip and play this for many folks back home in my district. But here you're absolutely right. But I was able to do that because look, let's focus on those things that we agree on. Now here now, right? These last 7-8 months, however long it's been, lowest unemployment rate since 2001. Because of the, you know, if people are looking at their 401ks, their 401ks are doing pretty good right now. And part of that is this sense, this hopefulness within the community, business community, those are good things. And a lot of that has been because of some of the regulatory reforms that have happened. Now, this isn't sexy stuff. This isn't, again, not above the fold, but these are some of the activities that have happened that is creating the environment in which these positive things have happened. I would say responding to the greatest hurricane that has ever hit the United States with more than 315 votes, I would say that's a pretty significant thing.
January to September, that's mm-hmm. the big accomplishment, mm-hmm. right? Is the Hurricane Harvey funding?
No, I would say these regulatory reforms, these congressional review acts, mm-hmm. that's the term, and there was 14 of these a pass. Prior, there had only been one, you know, in the history of Congress. But these are things that helped create this environment that has led to the lowest unemployment rates. Yeah. So I think when the president says
that he signed more major pieces of legislation than maybe any president ever. And like in the first year, he says things like that. I mean, that's not factually accurate.
I have not pulled a review out, and I have not had my intern fact check that yet. But I think one of the things that the failure on healthcare reform is something that I think people say, hey, this should have been done. Why hasn't this happened? It was that was something that I think clouds what people look mm-hmm. at has happened. And what are realistic expectations in the first 8 months? Now, ISIS is on the run.
Right.
There's no question about that. 8 months ago, nobody would have thought that China and Russia would be working with the United States at the United Nations to put additional sanctions on North Korea. So I think when it comes to national security, there are some things that have, and again, these are things that have been done right. In a fairly bipartisan level of support. So that's pretty successful, considering ISIS was something that we all were concerned about and was and like I said, they're on the run. Now we still have to deal with Al Qaeda. We're not out of the woods, and we're always going to be dealing with terrorism. But I think you can't overlook some of these successes when it comes to national security.
I was talking with one of your Democratic colleagues who said to me, I've been joking with some of your Republican colleagues, maybe you, I don't know, that given the way that President Trump has now found common ground with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, by the end of the year at this rate, he'll be supporting citizenship for dreamers and for single payer health insurance. Do you think that's where we're going, or that it's just more bipartisan agreement, and that there is one of the senses of Donald Trump is that he wasn't bound by being a Republican or a Democrat, right? Even though he was elected as a Republican,
I think predicting what's going to happen is I wouldn't put any money on it. But I will say when it comes to,
in fairness, I think that colleague was right. Sort of ribbing you.
Right. But I would say though, I think we can get to an agreement when it comes to DACA or the Dreamer kids. And I think the president's latest, you know, when you look at, you know, I think a lot of times people want to focus at one period in time on what the president says versus looking at the evolution of his opinions on a particular topic. And I always say, I've been in Congress 2.5 years. Congress works best when there's a deadline. And now that the clock is ticking on dealing with these kids, and I know some of these kids are now in their 20s, these are folks that have only ever known the United States of America. And many of these folks are in universities. Many are entrepreneurs. Many are, you know, contributing to our history, our culture, our society. We should continue that. The United States has benefited from the brain drain of every other country for the last couple of decades. Let's continue that. And let's continue from the hardworking drain as possible. But let's make sure there's legal status to be here. And I believe that we can actually come together in a bipartisan way to solve this problem. And it's likely to be involved with a broader conversation around border security as
well. So is it a good thing that the president made the decision that he made to sort of force Congress's hand here?
I don't know whether it's a good thing or not, but I think the folks that are in DACA, they need a permanent legislative solution so they're not continually be back and forth and the uncertainty of knowing what their status is. The only way you're going to erode uncertainty is a legislative fix. Now, having this clock ticking over their head, that creates angst and nervousness that I don't want anybody to have to go through. But the reality is, we're here. Congress needs to do its work.
I remember that day in 2012 when Obama announced that he was doing it. It's been 5 years, over 5 years at this point. Congress was never looking at this. And now Trump made the announcement that he made. Whatever you think of the announcement, it did make all of a sudden everybody on Capitol Hill, oh, well, we should do something about this, right? And that may not have been the president's strategy, but that is part of what happened here in the Congress always functioning sort of like a high school senior. And
I'm gonna use that. I'm gonna steal that line. But it really is. I literally had that. My nephew is a junior in high school, and my sister was literally just complaining about this topic, and so no, you're
he
right.
Also wouldn't pass DACA. Until.
so you're right. We got to focus on this. We got to get this done. You know, 800,000 people that all they've ever known is the United States of America. Let's get this done, and I believe we can.
Do you think that we need to get rid of the debt ceiling?
That's a complicated question because your listeners, they have to live you know, they can't spend more money than they make. The businesses that operate with throughout this country can't spend more money than they make. And I think the federal government should operate that way as well, too. So we have to make some tough decisions on this topic. And we are trying. We talk about the budget process and that the budget process is going to give us the tool called reconciliation, which will allow us to do tax reform. But also in this budget, we're talking about doing deficit reduction as well and making some of these tough decisions, because when you have a ballooning debt, the people that we are hurting are not us right now. It's
generations.
It's the generation behind us, right? It's the millennials now. It's the millennials' children. And whether the solution is getting rid of the debt ceiling, I think there has to be some kind of check on spending, and that's ultimately the responsibility of Congress. And you give that up, you're basically giving up your responsibility. I think our government works. Our government has this experiment called America has worked because of checks and balances. And so we have to address our growing debt issue, and the only way to do that is you superheat the economy to generate more receipts, and you control your spending. Right.
I want to switch gears to something. You said it's been about a month since what happened in Charlottesville. You said nobody should doubt whether the leader of the free world is against racism, bigotry, neo-Nazis, and anti-Semitism. You called for the president to apologize. He didn't. Do you doubt that the leader of the free world is that way? Do you think he should still apologize?
I think he created doubt. And you have to be unequivocal, Kabul, when it comes to racism, anti-Semitism. Right? And trying to create a moral equivalency between neo-Nazis and KKK members and folks that are standing up to protest hate. You can't do that. And so that doubt that was created. Be clear, be firm, drive on.
And should he come back to it?
It sort of
faded amazing. I mean, like, there's so much going on in the world, but it was a pretty big moment for the presidency, for the country.
It was, and to be frank, you know, that seems like ages ago now, and I don't remember all the follow-up statements and what was said after the fact. I think he has issued the words he's against the KKK and neo-Nazis, but I think this is something that he needs to continue to make clear that he's against and opposed.
You're in this weird spot. You are a Republican, and you are black.
Mm-hmm. Why is that a weird?
It just makes you a rarity in elected office. I mean, I will tell you that after Charlottesville, I heard a lot of people say, "Well, why doesn't Obama speak out more?" And my response to it was, "Well, yeah, I'm aware he's black, but he said pretty much on par with what other former presidents had said. Now there is that thing that makes him different from the other former presidents. Do you feel like you have a special obligation to stand up and talk about these things?"
So I have an opportunity to provide leadership on a number of topics. And for me, this one was very clear. My father's black, my mother's white. They met in Los Angeles, moved to Texas, San Antonio, Texas in 1971. He was a traveling salesman, and he was unable to stop at every restaurant or, you know, to eat. He couldn't stop in any hotel. This is in the 70s in Texas. And so for me then to think that, you know, 3.5 decades later, their youngest son is a member of Congress from a district that's Hispanic, right? I think is an indication of how far we come. But in situations like this, you got to be very clear, and you got to stand up. And it's 2017, and the fact that we're even talking about the KKK, right? The fact that we're talking about anti-Semitism is crazy. And we in order to stamp out this kind of thought, everybody needs to stand up. And if I have the opportunity, because I have a platform to do that through being a member of Congress, that's great. But I think everybody should be doing it regardless of their race or religion.
Let me ask you one last question because we're running short on time. You mentioned Beto O'Rourke, your friend. He is running for Senate in Texas. He's a Democrat. What do you want to see happen in that race? He's running against Ted Cruz.
Beto's a friend. Ted is a friend. And Beto knows this. He has a long way to go.
He knows he has a long way to go.
He knows that. But I do not think our junior senator is changing in this next election. But the competition of ideas is a good thing.
Are you going to sit out that campaign?
Yeah. Look, I think everybody knows who's gonna win that election. So I wish them both a great contest.
All right, Congressman Will Hurd, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
So that was Congressman Will Hurd, Republican of Texas. Thanks as always to our producer Bridget Mulcahy and Matt Sobosinski sitting in this week for a little extra help. Remember to subscribe and spread the word. Email me at isaac@politico.com with your thoughts, and follow me on Twitter and Facebook at Isaac Dover. And catch you next time on Off Message.